Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our live broadcast. Tonight I'd like to talk about the Aparihanya Dhamma. Aparihanya is a word that means not fading away or not being subject to decay. So we have in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta this king comes and asks the Buddha. No, this king sends his minister to come and ask the Buddha, "Hey, venerable sir, we're going to war with this city-state. And we want to know whether we're going to succeed. Are we going to be able to slaughter them all?" And I mean, it's a bizarre question to ask a Buddha, right? He doesn't use the word slaughter. Are we going to be able to defeat them? Will we be victorious? And the Buddha asks Ananda about these people, the Lichavis, I think. No, the it's not the Lichavis. The Wajjiputta, I can't remember. He asks about this other group of people, and he says, are they keeping these certain dhammas? And he gives a list of seven qualities, like respecting their elders and meeting together often, and taking care of their women folk, because of course the men were in charge of everything. But did they take care and respect their women folk, or did they abuse them? And the point being made that they were generally quite refined in their behavior, in their way of life. The Wajjis. And so the Buddha said, well, if they keep these seven dhammas, they won't ever come to ruin. They can be expected to prosper. And so anyway, the Buddha then goes on to explain what we have as the seven Aparihanya Dhamma. And he has actually several lists of Aparihanya Dhamma. For Buddhists, for the bhikkhus, they're called the Bhikkhu Aparihanya Dhamma. Kind of like it was an opportunity for him to teach something useful for the Buddhist monks and nuns and laymen and laywomen. I think this should be of most concern to us. Our concern for the environment, our concern for our society, I think all of these, all of the other worldly concerns that we have, even our concern for our livelihood and so on, which are all important practical concerns. The most important concern is our mind, our spirituality, our spiritual life. There's this saying, can't remember where it comes from, maybe it's from the Buddha or from the commentaries, that you'd give up your wealth to save an organ or a part of your body. Something's wrong, you spend a lot of money to try and repair something. Maybe even have a transplant. We'd be willing to give away a lot of our wealth to do that. We'd give anything physical, any material wealth we have to save our bodies, this part or that part, but we'd even sacrifice that organ, that very same organ or part of our body, we'd sacrifice it to save our lives. And so the question is, what's more important than our life? Because here we obviously have this hierarchy of importance, but there is something more important than our lives, and that's our mind. A person is foolish if they refuse to give up their treasure, their wealth for any part of their body, any vital part of their body, or important part of their body. But they would also be a fool to not want to give up, to not be willing to give up part of their body to save their lives, even if it meant amputating a hand or a foot, taking out a kidney, just about anything to stay alive. But we'd also be foolish if staying alive meant destroying our minds. If in order to stay alive, in order to worry about our livelihood, we had to sacrifice our mental well-being. And so some amount of importance has to be given to the spiritual community, to spirituality, to our religion. No? That's something that should be of concern to us. I'm just relating this to the stress and the trouble that we feel in the world today. And seeing how concerned people are for society and for, you know, with religious conflict and, of course, all ongoing political conflict and so on. And we sometimes get in concern over the climate, and we worry about our jobs, we worry about money and so on, but Much of our problems, much of the worry, much of the stress, We'd be better off. It would be better for us if we focused our attention on preserving Buddhism, preserving this wonderful religion that we have, preserving our community, preserving our meditative and our Buddhist community. And so these are the seven principles that we, as Buddhists or as practitioners of Buddhism, the seven things that we must hold, that's our duty to hold, our duty to uphold, our duty to cultivate and protect. Seven principles. And they translate quite well in English, so it comes out being quite a memorable list of qualities and principles. And these, of course, relate to meditation as well. They're very much about being meditative. And they are, in order, community. The first quality that we have to cultivate is community. We should always remember to meet together, to come together, to make effort to meditate together. Yes, you can meditate on your own, but there is greatness, there is strength in numbers. You meditating in a group is not just to support you, it's to support others in the group who may be failing, who may be faltering, who need the support and the encouragement. We consider it part of our duty and our responsibility to meet together, to come together, to listen to the Dhamma, to talk about the Dhamma, to practice the Dhamma. If we meet together often, the Buddha said, we will never fade away. We can be sure not to decline. The second one is harmony, community and harmony. Harmony, of course, goes with community. It does us no good if we meet together often but fight and bicker and argue and let our defilements run the show, or if we're worried and afraid and stressed. Or if we're restless and agitated or confused. If we threaten the harmony by bringing our baggage to the meeting, letting our emotions ruin the harmony. So we should meet in harmony. When we come together, we should not disturb each other. We should be considerate of each other. We should spend time when we meet cultivating love and kindness and friendship for each other, wishing each other well in our minds, extending our thoughts. May you be happy. May you all be free from suffering. May you all find peace. In Buddhist time, there's a prime example of this is Anuruddha and his two friends living in this park. The Buddha came to visit them and asked them how they managed to live in the rain so well together. And Anuruddha said, "Well, we don't talk, but every 5 days we come together and then we talk and we discuss, and we never do what we want to do. We always acquiesce to what the others want to do. We never think about ourselves, we never put ourselves first. Their only concern is the harmony of the group." It's quite a poetic, if you read what Anuruddha says, how they managed to live together. Many monasteries and monastic communities can take a page out of that book. It's too easy to let your tempers flare and get upset, lose sight of the importance. We were talking in this, we had this interreligious meeting on campus, and we were talking about Christmas and a Christmas tree. And on McMaster they put up these Christmas trees, and someone suggested that they don't put up a Christmas tree because, well, it's not everyone's Christian. And it actually became a heated argument, apparently. And the woman who was telling the story remarked, "You know, it's not very in line with the whole meaning of Christmas, about peace and kindness, and, you know, very easily we lose sight of what's right, what's good, what's important." Even as Buddhists, it happens. Most harmonious is when we meditate together, when we're mindful. We don't even disturb people to the point of fidgeting. We have our minds clear and our minds focused. So the second is harmony. The third is integrity. Integrity means we have principles. We don't make up new rules. We don't abolish old rules. We follow the rules as they've been laid down by the Buddha. For meditators, we only have 8 rules. I've been to meditators where they have lots and lots more rules, and honestly, we have some other rules, but they're unspoken, and I'm loath to write them down and make them codified, because it's somehow dishonoring the Buddha to put too importance on our rules of the center. Not that we couldn't, but it's nice to have just the 8 rules to give preference and to privilege the actual rules of the Buddha. But most important is that we keep them. It's okay to have other rules of the community. It's not wrong, but the point being that we respect the rules. We keep principles, not just rules, but principles. Rules are fairly easy to keep for the most part. Principles are much harder. Principles means guarding your acts and your speech. It means reflecting before you act. Is this worth acting? It means, is this in line with my principles? As you're acting, am I doing the right thing after you've acted? Did I do what was right? It means being mindful, being aware when you're walking, being aware that you're walking, when you sit, being aware that you're sitting. When you think, being aware of your thoughts, being principled in all aspects is very much a part of the meditation practice. Integrity. Number four is humility. Humility means we respect each other. We respect our elders, we respect those who have experience in meditation, we respect those in position of seniority. This is a big monastic thing in Buddhism, is we respect seniors. And that the seniors act respectably, but act to be worthy of the respect, right? One of the most common reasons why there is lack of respect for seniors is because the seniors are not worth respecting. The other common reason is that juniors have large egos and think they know everything and think they know better than their seniors. Having a sense of humility, not to judge each other, not to, as it says in the Buddhist Vinaya, not to look in the other monk's bowl. When you're eating, one of the rules that we have is actually you're not allowed to look in the other monk's bowl if your intention is to try and find fault, to see whether the other monk is doing something wrong. Is he breaking a rule the way he eats? Is he eating in some wrong way? Is he breaking some principle or precept? But it's kind of a symbol. You can apply the principle to any aspect of life. Don't look in each other's bowls, unless you're looking to fill their bowl, looking to see if they have enough. Criticizing each other, pointing out each other's faults. No, helping each other, of course. You only look in someone else's bowl when you want to fill it up. So if someone is doing something wrong, sometimes you can help them. There are cases where you can be very sharp with them. But you act with humility. You don't act out of ego or a sense of condescension that you know better than them. You act out of kindness and compassion, wishing for them to be happy, wishing to make their life better. You act for their benefit. You have humility. We don't have arrogance and conceit and think that we're the best. To humility we have purity. Purity means we dispel craving. Purity means as individuals and as a community, we don't let craving rule us. Sometimes some communities, money and wealth get in the way. Some communities, it's worldly desires, worldly affairs. Sometimes it's the desire for comfort leads to loosening of monastic discipline. Desire for pleasure. Desire is something that ruins a community. It ruins the individual, but it also ruins the community. Greed. So, of course, a very important core Buddhist principle is to free ourselves from greed. After purity comes sanctity, but sanctity is perhaps a little misleading. It means, sanctity means the sanctity of, specifically the sanctity of solitude. The sanctity of the space. Not dismissing forgetting, ignoring the importance of the space, the importance of solitude, the importance of your own space to meditate, the importance of the meditation center as a place to meditate. We don't violate the sanctity of the space by playing loud music or making noise, leaving a mess. We are clean and we keep the space clean for ourselves and others. We respect and we revere the solitude of the meditative space. And finally, hospitality. We welcome others. We wish for others to stay. We wish for others to come. Those who have already come, when they're those who are practicing well and have already arrived at our center, we wish for them to stay and to stay in peace. We wish for them to stay comfortably. Those who have not yet come, those who wish to come, we wish for them to come. We wish for them to, we welcome them to our center. We open the doors to those who would practice well. Those who would cultivate goodness, those who would cultivate purity. Hospitality is an important Buddhist principle. It's an important religious principle in general. But these seven define a community. These seven are the pillars that hold a community up, that allow us to get to the work that needs to be done. Not everything is just about meditation. We need these principles to keep Buddhism alive, something for us to consider, something for us to consider while we focus on our meditation, while we focus on ourselves. Meditation is a long, arduous, difficult process. It will bring you to your knees. It will make you cry. It will make you feel worthless. It will make you want to give up. In fact, you might say that meditation is just a series of failures. Importantly so. Because failure leads you to let go. It leads you to stop trying to force things to be the way you want. You realize that you have no control, that you aren't in charge. And that changes the way you look at things. It changes the way you interact with things, the way you interact with the world. It's a very difficult and involved process. It requires patience. It requires a level of refinement that can only be cultivated in a supportive environment. We have to work very hard to keep the environment suitable and supportive for our meditators, for each other. And by space, it means this meditation center. It also means our online space. I feel that this Deer Park has gotten more and more cluttered. Less and less of a... I'm rather critical of it now as being it was much simpler before. Now people come on and I think it's quite overwhelming, this artificial virtual reality space. Maybe something to consider for the staff of the Buddha Center to consider whether... Anyway, it's just an example. This is a great space. We're very thankful to have this space to come together from all over the world. But we do have to consider always the sanctity of the space and the importance of making sure that it's user-friendly, conducive to meditation. So that we can do the hard work, and so that we're encouraged to do the hard work, and so that we succeed in our work. We succeed in trying to see things as they are. We succeed in seeing impermanence so that we stop clinging to things as stable, stop trying to find stability, stop wishing for even our meditation to be always the same. Stop hoping for some kind of relief from the uncertainty of life so that we see suffering. And we stop trying to pretend that we can find satisfaction in ephemeral reality, in the things that come and go. We stop looking for happiness outside of ourselves. Stop looking for happiness, period. And start looking for goodness. Rather than cultivating happiness, we cultivate goodness. Sukasetang bhikkhave adivacchanang yadidang punyani. Which basically means that it's goodness. Goodness means happiness. If you're looking for happiness, stop. Look for goodness. You'll find happiness. And non-self. We do the work to try to see clearly so that we can see non-self. We can see that there is no control, that our experiences don't belong to us. We aren't in charge. We don't possess these things. So that we give up ego and conceit. We give up control. Even trying to control our own minds. And we let go. We let go of our minds. We let go of even our own minds. It's interesting. Our minds discard our minds. Anyway, there you go. That's the Dhamma for tonight. Apologies. It's been a long week, and today I gave a talk in a Indian religions class. I had to talk about myself, which is always arduous, but they were entertained or impressed and happy to hear about it. But yeah, it's been a long week, and it's coming up to the end of the semester. It's unfortunate that my schoolwork gets in the way, and I was hoping that it wouldn't, but it does take energy to do academic study. So, well, thank you all for tuning in and for coming out, and I hope these sessions are still useful. Have a good night. Oh, I guess if there's questions, I can answer some questions. All right, if there are no immediate questions, I'll take my leave. Wish you all a good night. See you all soon.